and welcome to the Trevin Ben podcast, episode 180.
I bet you've been looking forward to doing that all day, haven't you?
I've been counting down in my head since about episode 140. I've been thinking, oh, I can't wait to get to that 180 just to do that.
Well, I'm glad it's done now, because that means that's the end of the darts checkout references. That's the last one.
Yeah, that's a shame, isn't it? What can we do next? What would be the next thing? Cricket scores, I suppose.
Well, that could go on to the 500-600s.
Yeah, that gives us plenty of scope, didn't it?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I don't think you asked how I was, but I am good.
I didn't ask.
How are you?
But thank you for assuming that I would have asked that question.
I think you care.
Of course I care, and I would have asked the question. Anyway, but you're fine, are you? That's the main thing.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah, no, I'm all right. Although I've been quite tetchy today, so I'm just warning you in case I think I could go off at anything. I woke up tetchy. You know those days when you just wake up and you got out of bed the wrong side?
Yeah.
And I've been like that all day. Like, it just really on edge.
I was going to ask what caused it, but you just seem to have woken up in this mood.
Yeah, I don't know whether I had a dream, you know, that I can't remember that put me in a bad mood, but I just woke up and I just thought, oh, fuck off. Do you know when you just wake up, you think, oh, no, it's Monday again. I've got another Monday. Just fuck off.
Sometimes I wake up and get a bit of a bollocking from Mrs. Ben, right, from something I've done in her dream.
Right, yes. Yeah.
And I do try and point out, you realise that's just happened in your head, I haven't actually done anything wrong. But first thing in the morning, she doesn't want to hear it.
No, well, I'm not surprised.
How could you? You cheated on me with that bitch. No, what? Who?
Who was she?
I don't know. So someone I've never met, probably.
Just that bitch. I'd like to delve into this a little bit deeper. Like, who are you cheating on your wife with in your wife's dreams?
Oh, usually perfect strangers. And she wakes up pretty annoyed. It doesn't happen very often. Once in a blue moon.
Who do you cheat on your wife with in your dreams?
I'll never tell.
Oh, come on, mate. It's only you and me.
Oh, it's only you and me, is it? No, I'm very faithful in my dreams.
Oh, yeah, of course you are, mate. Yeah.
I am. I'm a true gentleman.
Yeah, right. I mean, that might be why she has a go at you, because you're probably saying another woman's name in your sleep. And just it's just the name that you're saying out loud that is sort of by osmosis becoming her dream of your infidelity.
Well, maybe because in recent weeks we've been talking about who's going to be the new co-host for This Morning with Holly Willoughby.
Yes.
And we were really trying to sort of audition ourselves. So I wonder if possibly I was muttering about Holly Willoughby in my sleep, and maybe that's got me in all sorts of trouble.
Maybe. And you were probably practicing a link. And I mean, since we, of course, recorded last time, that story has moved on at quite a pace. I mean, I don't think we should get into it too much, but it's...
No, you don't want to. I would happily sit here and bitch about it all day, but you're taking the sort of polite route out of this one.
Yeah, I just think legally, let's steer clear of the whole Phil and Holly thing for now.
Coward.
The one thing I will say is I cannot believe the coverage it has got. I mean, I watched the interview that the BBC, I think he did two interviews, but I saw the BBC one, and it was kind of like it sounds like he's killed someone, or like the magnitude of this interview. It's like where they interviewed Prince Andrew, and that sort of the magnitude that interview had. This felt the same. And I just thought, my God, is it really worthy of this kind of coverage? And then, but then I found myself being drawn in. I wasn't going to watch it. And it was kind of being played on a bit of a loop, I think. So I kind of caught the end of it. And I found myself being compelled. I thought, well, I've got to watch the whole thing now, haven't I?
Well, I mean, I noticed we saw the real Phil. I thought, he's dropped the whole smarmy, nice, charming persona, and he's just sitting there puffing on his vape.
Yes. Mind you,
very unprofessional. You never catch me doing that.
Well, no, I want to shift the subject just a little bit, actually. Because I mentioned it's episode 180.
Oh, yeah.
Which means Of course, it's only 20 to go to episode 200. And I just want to point out, it's interesting you bring up vaping, because this only came to my mind when I was thinking about this being episode 180. But I think on episode 150, we spoke about you giving up the vaping by episode 200. So we've got 20 to go. And I just thought I'd ask you how that's going.
That's less than half a year.
It's less than half a year for you to finally give up the vaping entirely.
I reckon I could. I'm on the lowest possible nicotine injection of 3 milligrams.
Right.
And I buy a new sort of bottle of vape juice once every couple of weeks.
I mean, I can't work that out. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, no, for context, when I was smoking, a packet of fags a day would cost me about 12, 13 quid. And I'm now spending about 11 quid a fortnight.
Well, that's not bad, is it?
It's quite a saving.
That's all right.
I mean, God knows what's in this stuff and how much faster I'm killing myself than I would be with the cigarettes. But I reckon 20 weeks I could knock the vape on the head.
Okay, well, I mean, I did set the challenge on episode 150. I just thought I'd a little refresher, a little reminder of the challenge. I'm not going to come down on you like a ton of bricks if by episode 200 you haven't been. We may not even mention it. I might have forgotten it by then.
I hope so. Do I win a prize, by the way?
A slightly few more years on the end of your life.
20 Lambert and Butler Silver. I'm under no illusion, by the way, that it's a healthy thing to do. It's just I hope it's far less shit than smoking is. But
I saw is it Canada? I think it's in Canada now. The health messages that are on the packets of cigarettes that have got more graphic over the years.
Yeah.
They're now going to have, I think it's in Canada, every single cigarette is going to have some sort of health message on it. So, like, every single cigarette is going to remind you of the...
The thing is, that would just make me smoke it faster to get rid of the horrible message.
Yeah, see, I don't know whether those things on cigarette packets are like pictures of lungs or blackened.
It doesn't work. They literally put pictures of corpses on the box and people will still buy them.
Yeah.
People aren't stupid. It's not a surprise that it's unhealthy for you. People know.
Yes.
It turns out it's to be very addictive.
Yes, I suppose because it probably brings in a lot of money to the government, really, which is why they've just not... Because I just thought they'd just go, look, let's just ban all cigarettes. Just that's it. Just stop it. But I suppose they can't because, A, it would go underground. People would be buying cigarettes in, I don't know, down little alleyways. There'll be people selling cigarettes. Yeah. And secondly, it must bring in a lot of money for the governments. So they can't really afford... Because I've noticed, like, the thing with gambling, like, that's become the new acceptable vice. So they shove gambling down your throat and they think they can... Because, again, they make a lot of money out of that, the government now. So that's the sort of an acceptable vice. But they can kind of get around it by on all the adverts saying, make sure you gamble responsibly, you know. It's like, fuck off.
People are
going mental with the gambling, and now of course they're starting to talk about in sport it being too much. Like they're talking about maybe not having sponsorship of football shirts with gambling on. So what will be the next acceptable vice that will come in? I mean, would it be like things like hummus, quinoa? Like something that they could really make a lot of money on, the government. They start really taxing it. They say, well, this is like a luxury good.
Avocados.
I mean, avocados like a millennial. If you're a millennial, that's probably a vice now, isn't it? You can't
that
have
would
a
cost
day
you more than smoking, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, they're expensive. And the carbon footprint of an avocado is huge as well, isn't it?
I do love an avocado. I might swap that out when I'm giving up the vape. I might take up the avocados.
Yeah, but does that mean like throughout this thing, you know, rather than the odd sort of noise of you, which is an odd noise that I get to hear that I cut out, but this sort of odd sucking noise?
Now hang on, that isn't fair because I deliberately don't do it until we take little breaks in between.
Yeah.
So that's a lie. I mean, I've done it once for comic effect in this bit, but that's bollocks.
Through an avocado every podcast.
I want you to admit that I don't vape usually during the show.
No, it's when we have a little break and I just hear you like sucking away, like a man possessed, because you know you've got to get sort of 16 sucks in to cover the next segment.
We're talking about Philip Schofield again.
You are very restrained, I think, with your vaping these days.
Thank you very much. And by the way, they still make, to show you what an enormous tax the government put on the cigarettes. I recently went through duty free at an airport and we because my missus is planning to stop smoking, but she still is smoking. So whilst we were going through duty-free, we picked up some cigarettes, and she managed to buy 200 cigarettes for the price that we'd get for 40 cigarettes in England. Wow. So, and by the way, they're still making a profit on that because they wouldn't sell it otherwise.
No.
So if they're still making a profit, and you know, you could buy an extra 160 you know, it's just mental for the same price. Think of the markup on that, and they're still making a profit. It's astonishing how much you could actually buy cigarettes for if they weren't taxed up the wazoo.
So how was it? Because you've been on your holiday since we last recorded a podcast to Gibraltar. How was it?
I won't lie, Gibraltar is a bit of a dump.
Well, that's a shock to me, because that's where you got married, and I quite enjoyed it when I came over for your wedding.
Yes, that was 9 years ago.
Yes.
I just thought I'd send you some little images. I know this is no good for the audio listeners, but you know, these will make sense to you in a minute.
Okay.
So as you can see in the first image there, I've sent you a lovely historical image of the glorious hotel I got married in 9 years ago.
Yes.
In image two, that's what's left of it. It is, and I'm not joking, a pile of rubble.
Yeah.
Now, people might be thinking, oh, Ben, you're exaggerating. Surely it's an empty shell of a hotel. No, it's brick.
It's gone. And it's not
it's
even...
It's gone.
Like, from the photo, it doesn't even look like it's dust.
It was called the Coletta Hotel, and it's now, like you can see, a pile of rubble. There was rumour that the Hilton Hotel people might be trying to buy it and take it over and, you know, make it a Hilton Hotel there. But they obviously deemed the existing shell of the building so shit there was nothing salvageable about it. So that's gone. I was actually looking forward to maybe hoping I could get close to where I got married and have a little trip down memory lane. No.
Yes.
Nope. Then you can see in the next image what you might think looks like a sunken ship.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to work out what it is. There's some cranes in the water and what looks like tugboats.
There are two red ships with cranes on.
Yes.
And in the middle is indeed a sunken ship.
Sunken ship.
Now, you might say, Ben, well, come on. That's a sunken ship. That's going to take a little while to deal with. And I say, yeah, fine. Give them a month to get that shifted. That's okay. I understand these things. It's a logistical problem. Basically, what happened was a boat was trying to leave Gibraltar, ran into trouble, and they got the instruction, fuck it, just sink it in Gibraltar.
What sort of boat is it? Is it a cargo ship or something?
Apparently, it had oil on it, quite a lot of oil.
God.
So it was better they decided to not sink it in the water and pollute the place. They just decided run it aground in Gibraltar. And it's been there for 9 fucking months.
Wow. Well, I suppose you've got to work out how to get the oil out without polluting the beautiful shorelines of Gibraltar.
That's fine. I understand that. Shouldn't take 9 months. And now it's a scar on the skyline. Well, not the skyline, the sea line, I should say. It's awful. And then if you look at the final image I've sent you, which is the view from the little Airbnb where I was staying, looks directly out in the opposite direction over more rubble, a crane, and some bins.
Wow. Beautiful scenery. Why has it got... Well, it's not the beautiful place that I remember coming to for your wedding. It's turned into... Basically, Gibraltar's a building site.
Yes, it is. The whole country is a grotty building site. But I wouldn't have gone there if it was entirely my choice. But we had some family matters to attend to, so I had to do that out of sort of loyalty to someone. But I've done it. It's done. I did make the most of it, and we did have a nice stay, but I will not be going back in my lifetime.
Are the monkeys still there?
I have no idea. Part of me is a little bit worried they're trapped under all that rubble.
Did you not see any monkeys?
I didn't see a single monkey.
Wow, because that's like a big thing, isn't it? When I came over, I went specifically on a little trip to go and see some monkeys. I've got a picture of me with a monkey on my shoulder.
Yes.
Very exciting. And they said to
it, still...
I remember them saying at the hotel, basically, don't leave windows open. And certainly don't leave any bags of stuff, food out on balconies, because the monkeys will come and they just ransack the place.
They do. Yeah, they're good fun. I imagine they're still on the rock somewhere, but they certainly aren't around that hotel anymore because, well, there is no hotel there anymore.
There's no food for them to get, is there? There's nothing to
Speaking of food.
Yeah.
We really snookered ourselves because, like I said, we're in an Airbnb. It's self-catered and there was nothing on that side of the rock. Everything is on the other side, so I keep jumping on buses for hours at a time.
When you say hours, I mean, it's a tiny place, isn't it, really? When you say hours at a time, do you mean
minutes? I didn't understand the bus route. the first day I was there, so I had to take a 40-minute walk each way to the nearest shop.
Okay.
Which was exhausting in the sun. And by the way, I say there's nothing on that side of the rock. There is one thing on that side of the rock, and it was a seafood restaurant.
Oh, that sounds good, Ben. Probably freshly caught from the sea.
Me and Mrs. Ben aren't all that keen on seafood.
Man, come on,
and
mate.
Fresh fish,
lovely.
We went, and it was on the bank holiday, the end of May bank holiday.
Yeah.
Apparently there was some big party in Gibraltar, so I didn't see any festivities going on, but apparently there was. So I thought, oh, this will be a good night for the restaurant. And they explained that rather than cashing in on this bank holiday, they were going to be closing early. So I said, oh, right, okay, what time do you close so we can come and eat? And they said, oh, 6 p.m.
Okay.
I said, okay, I mean, that's a little early for dinner, but... So then I went back to Mrs. Ben and I said, look, they close at 6 p.m. It's apparently a big Gibraltar party, May bank holiday thing. I said, I don't want to be that dickhead who shows up at 5 to 6 when they're due to close, so maybe we should go a little bit early. We showed up at 4:30.
Sounds good to me. Plenty of time for a nice meal to be cooked.
I should take this moment to remind you of the frosty relationship between the Spaniards, the people of Gibraltar, and the English tourists. So we turned up at 4:30. I said, oh, could we get a couple of menus, please? No. I said, sorry? He said, no. You drinks? You want drinks? I said, no. A menu? Food menu? He said, no food. Too late.
Too late for food.
Too late. And I said, oh, I thought you closed at 6. He said, yes, we do. And they just turned and walked away.
Wow. I mean, fish, you can cook a bit of fish in about 12 minutes. I mean, I think they saw you come in and thought, fucking, here they come, the English.
By the way, I should check.
Tears.
Is the Spanish accent still one we can get away with? That's not going to get me cancelled, is it?
Oh, is that what you were doing? I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure what accent you were doing. But
just generic foreign.
Wow, so you didn't get you didn't get any food?
No, we didn't. And then the next day we went back. And like I say, we're not big seafood fans. And I certainly didn't want to sit down to a swordfish when I wasn't in the sort of swordfish mood. So I ordered a burger, which they didn't advertise on the menu that they smuggled a giant slab of goat's cheese inside.
Ooh.
Which made it way too salty. And then even when you took it out, it sort of contaminated everything. So everything tasted like goat's cheese. So that was a waste. That was 25 quid each. For a horrible burger and overcooked chips.
Well, it sounds like a lovely holiday. How's the flight? I mean, because the last time I flew was 9 years ago. I did two things that year. One was your wedding in Gibraltar, and I went to a wedding in South Africa. And that was the last time I flew because I hate flying now. Like, I used to get excited about getting on a plane and going somewhere. And yes, of course, getting there is still exciting. But being on a plane, I think, is one of the worst experiences of being a human being that you can possibly have. I find, A, it's so uncomfortable, especially if you're a tall man with long legs. Who do they make these things for? Hobbits?
Well, the pair of us, I mean, I'm 6'5". What are you, 6'4"?
I'm 6'3", 6'4", something like that.
So, yes, for us, it's incredibly uncomfortable. Mrs. Ben did go to the effort of booking me an exit seat.
It's still uncomfortable.
Yeah, an exit seat, by the way, gets you about an inch more room.
Yes.
And it'll cost you a lot more money. So I wouldn't really say it was worth it. So that was a disappointment. Then there was one thing that did irritate me, which was the stewards had a real problem with my jumper. I took off my hoodie and I just had it on my lap and I had my belt on like a good boy and I was listening to the safety instructions. And then just before takeoff, they said, excuse me, sir, you need to either put that hoodie on or wrap it round your waist and tie it up.
If the plane crashes, the last thing you want is a jumper flying towards you, isn't it?
And then moments after she left, someone else came along and said, excuse me, sir, that jumper needs to be either put on or tied up around your waist.
Wow.
Can't be loose.
Can't be
loose. And I said, okay, no problem, I'm doing it. And I thought, what on earth is the issue here? Maybe it's because we had an exit seat, you can't have anything cluttering them. But to be honest, if there is a sudden emergency where everyone is running for their lives towards the exit doors, the plane's veering out of control, my jumper is no longer the problem at that point, is it?
Well, what I would say is, what if it was then on the floor and in some not great light, it becomes a trip hazard?
Again, if you are, you know, the lights have gone out, you're in the middle of the ocean, you can't see, people are crying, you know, some people are dead, missing, feared, the worst.
Yeah.
Who the fuck's left this jumper here?
Oh, I'd be furious.
I don't think so, do you?
If I chipped over your fucking hoodie, I'd be furious. I'd be trying to find the stewardess who's still alive. Just to complain. I'd be pressing the call button. even though the plane's sinking, I'd be pushing the button. You know, excuse me, will somebody please remove this jumper on the floor?
So I'm assuming it might have been because we were in exit seat, or she just thought, upon takeoff, my jumper will defy the laws of physics and gravity, float up in the air, fly in the opposite direction towards the pilot who's carelessly left his doors open, and it'll hit him in the face, obscuring his view. He'll career in the plane into the Rock of Gibraltar, and that'll be the end of all of us. It's just preposterous. It just felt really petty.
Yeah. I mean, I do find that there are lots of rules when you get on a plane. A lot of them obviously make good sense, don't they?
Yes.
But like when they come round just before you take off, they've done their little display of where the exits are. No one's ever listening. So, I mean, if the plane goes down, you're fucked because you don't know where they are.
Oh, hang on a minute. Hang on, Trev. You've always got the brace position.
Well, yes. That's helpful.
Isn't it helpful in a 500-mile-an-hour flame? Yeah, that's really helpful, that brace position.
The other thing about flying that I really dislike is, particularly when you do a long-haul flight, it's you're a long time cooped up with a lot of fucking dickheads. The people I really hate is when you've landed and you're taxiing to the terminal, and it's very clear, they've said it, the seatbelt sign's still on, don't take your seatbelt off, don't get up until the plane comes to a standstill. And you always get about three or four people who think, well, that obviously doesn't apply to me, and I'm so important that I need to get off this plane, like, pronto, so I'm going to get up. And the stewardess has to come over and say, excuse me, sir, would you mind sitting down? It's like, you fucking idiot. Like, it's everyone knows the deal. Like, what is wrong with you? We're all going to get off the plane eventually. We're all can't wait to get off this fucking tin bucket that now smells of everyone.
Oh yeah, that's you know, for a flight to Gibraltar, I mean, that's 3 hours of farts circulating in that tin can. Yeah,
and I don't understand, like, with planes, you know, and again, it's all down to greed and money, isn't it? But why in the 21st century we still have different class systems on a plane, where you can only really have comfort on a plane if you spend thousands and thousands of pounds. I think, like, when I went to South Africa, I think my flights were around £1,000.
Yikes. Right?
Everyone should have a level of comfort that's the same. Just because you got £4,000, and you should have leg room. But if you haven't got £4,000, you can't have leg room, you know?
And let's stop having expensive
three seats together, because there's a lot of getting up and down when the person at the window seat wants to go for a piss, then the person in the middle wants to get up and go for a piss. There's a lot of getting up and down, isn't there? And I said, can't we just have planes designed that are just better for everyone?
But you know, commercially, they're never going to do that, because it's working very well for them now.
I know.
They're not going to go to extra expense and effort just to be nice.
Do you remember that, what's his name? The guy who runs Ryanair. Is it Ryanair? The cheap budget airline. And I don't know
his name escapes me, but I do vaguely know.
I think
who
it's Michael
about.
O'Leary.
I was going to say, is he an Irish fella? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and I don't know how true this was, but there was a thing once where he was looking into, rather than having seats, you'd have like you would stand up, sort of against some sort of board that you would be strapped to.
So you're strapped to a board standing up, like Hannibal Lecter?
Yeah,
they wheel you on.
I don't know if they wheel you on. I think you walk on yourself and then strap yourself to the board.
Me and Mrs. Ben, though, we realised it was such a false economy rushing to get off the plane first.
Yes.
Because A, it's kind of stressful with everyone's rushing and reaching for their hand luggage and trying to fight each other to get off the plane.
Yeah.
Just sit there, calm down, let everyone else get off first.
Yeah.
Because if you're the first off the plane, guess what? You're the first person to baggage claim, where you then have to wait.
Oh, then you've got a long wait for the baggage. Yeah, because that's another thing, isn't it? That takes ages.
And if I'm off the plane last, there's still a small wait at baggage claim. So all you've done by racing off first and, you know, get off first, woo! Yeah. You've just guaranteed you're first in the next long wait.
Yes, I know. I don't... Oh, man, this is the problem with... I don't miss the whole flying airport experience. It's such a miserable, miserable thing. The other thing I hate, it's the same on a train, this, when you got people with luggage and you've got the corridor that you have to go down to get to your seat, and then you get the faffer. If I've got my hand luggage, I get to my seat, I put it in the hold thing above your seat and sit down. But then you get like those people who faff. They're standing in the corridors and no one can move, and they're trying to put their bag in, then they take their coat off and put that up, then they take their jumper off, Ben. And they faff about with that. You just think, just move out the fucking way. I remember coming back from America, I bought an umbrella in America because it was pissing it down the whole time. And I wasn't allowed to take that on as hand luggage, because I just thought I'd take it on and shove it in the locker
overhang thing,
overhead lockers, right? I thought, yeah. Okay, well, no, you can't take it on. Like, was it, could it be used as a weapon? Is that what they think? And then I had to put it
in. That'd be the most British way to beat someone up, thrash them with your umbrella.
I know, I'm hijacking the plane, I've got an umbrella.
You could poke him with the sharp bit on the end.
Right, nobody move or I open the umbrella.
I would have just thrown it away rather than faff about taking it on a plane.
What I should have done, because I then had to put it through excess baggage. So the right old fucking palaver. And then when I get back to London, I had to go not only to the normal baggage reclaim and wait hours there for my bag to come. Why do they move so fucking slowly as well, those belts?
I reckon, well, those baggage carousels, they are insufferable, aren't they?
I reckon a bit more speed on that won't make much. You could still get it.
Oh, I know. And all the same people who rush off the plane first, they all jockey for position.
Oh, I know.
Because they can't be bothered to wait for the carousel to come round. So they have to get the prime spot.
And they sort of push and they wait. It's like a goalkeeper waiting for a penalty to be taken, waiting for their bag to come. It's like, all right, it's coming. Calm down, people. Jesus Christ. So then I had to go all the way to, like, large baggage reclaim.
Never, ever crossed my mind to buy an umbrella for myself. I've never owned one and I never will. If it rains, I get wet. That's just how it works.
Oh, but I'd been in New York for 3 days and it was just pissing it down all the time. I went to New Jersey.
Well, I was going to have a go at you for that, but my Spanish earlier on was pretty crap.
I went to New Jersey and I had a coffee while I was in New Jersey. I went to see an ice hockey game. I was with a mate and we'd been out all day and it was pissing it down. I ended up having to go into a Walmart. And I had to buy a towel, some new socks.
AK-47.
A gun, yeah. and the thing was, my feet and the trainers, they honked. Like, the hotel room absolutely honked. When I left, I thought, God, that I feel for them having to defume this this room. But I was just wet. So that's why I had to buy an umbrella in the end, because it was like, I'm just getting so soaked. The other thing about the ice hockey game, I had my rucksack with me with all my valuables and I didn't want to leave them in the hotel. And I had been out taking pictures all day. So I had my video camera and like, they kicked up a massive fuss about, you can't take that in there.
Hang on, that's got a bit Northern Irish there. And you can't be taking that in there.
And I said, well, why not? And they went, I suppose because I think they just said, we don't allow videos to be taken. I won't take a video, you know. And like, we came to this ridiculous compromise where I'll take the battery out then. And it was like, that's fine. It's like, well, I could go to my seat and put it back in. If I was that adamant, I was going to film the fucking thing.
And it's I thought you meant you left the battery with them temporarily.
But no, I just said, well, I'll take the battery out. And they went, that's fine.
They probably knew you weren't an issue and they just thought, oh, fuck it, just get them in.
And these feet honk, just get rid of it. So when talking about being on a plane,
yeah,
and annoying things that happen on a plane, here's a list of the most annoying things another passenger can do on a plane. And I want you to tell me whether you've ever experienced anything like this on a plane.
Okay.
Someone is sick or soils themselves.
I mean, that's got to be rare. I mean, being sick, I think I'd actually feel a little bit sorry for anyone who was sick, especially if it was just travel sickness.
Yes, yeah.
You have to be in a fairly bad way to be soiling yourself on a flight. I don't know why that would happen.
Maybe nerves get to you, or you've come back from somewhere, you've got a bit of a dodgy belly.
There are toilets on board. There is little excuse to shit yourself on a plane.
Okay. People who are not using headphones while watching something.
Yeah, but I wonder, that would piss me off, although I'd probably have my own headphones in, so it wouldn't bother me too much. But yeah. I think on the sly, I'd probably grasp them up to the air stewards and put in a complaint.
Do they have, on a short-haul flight, did you have like a little screen on the seat in front of you to watch something if you wanted to?
No, there was nothing like that, no.
No. So I remember my first long-haul flight back in 1999, they didn't have your own individual screen. It was just a big screen at the sort of front of that bit of the plane, but you had your own individual headphones.
I remember that, but I must say, my memories of that are from when I was about 10 years old, so I think that's a very outdated
practice. I mean, these days, it was very difficult to watch a film like that because there's so much going on. But I actually find watching a film on those little screens is very, you can't really get into anything properly. I've tried to watch films on, whenever I've never come off of a plane having watched a film and thought, that was a brilliant film. It's just annoyed me watching it on this little screen.
The other thing to it is, do you want to gamble that you're going to get on a plane with a shitty tiny little screen, bad headphones, and maybe choose one of three options of films you would never watch at home or in the cinema or pay for?
Yeah.
Or are you going to take your iPad or your iPhone, which you could download exactly what you want at home in advance and just take thousands of hours of stuff and have at your leisure and watch something you actually like?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to do that these days, aren't you?
That's exactly what I did.
Next is trying to open the exit door during the flight. Somebody did that recently. Did you see the video of that?
Yes, and they got arrested immediately.
Yes, why? I don't understand why you do it.
I think they were at an altitude. The plane was landing and it was a fairly low altitude when they started doing it, which I think makes it more possible. I think it's a kind of a myth that you'd be able to open the emergency door at peak altitude. I think the pressure would just be impossible. But no, if I saw someone fiddling with the emergency door, I would wrestle them to the ground. And I don't think I'd get punished for it either.
No, I don't think you'd get punished for wrestling someone to the ground.
Could you punch someone in the head if you saw them fiddling with the emergency door? Would that be reasonable force?
Yeah, I reckon you could use that jumper as a restraining.
Garrot them with a sleeve.
Yeah. Okay, here's the thing. It'll be interesting to find out your views on this. Shoes on or shoes off on a plane?
Your shoes should definitely be kept on.
Yes.
Especially on your way back
New York, from New York. Especially
exactly.
New York.
I did slip my trainers off for the last sort of few minutes, and my God, it felt... I can only think it was as... You know how sometimes women say at the end of a long day, taking the bra off is a very, oh, thank God that thing's off.
Yes.
That's how I felt after slipping my shoes off, and I wish I'd done it sooner, to be honest, because my feet didn't smell, so I was all right. I'm very hygienic. I had a wash before getting on, and clean socks, clean, brand new shoes as well.
Well, that's handy.
So I did slip them off, so that's not a problem. I think so long as you're hygienic, clean, not, as you put it, honking, then it's okay.
Okay, two more of these. Okay, now this is a bugbear of mine, is the reclining seat. When people push their seat back with no thought as to how that affects the person behind them, particularly like if perhaps their tray is down and they've got a drink or something on there, or even just the fact, again, if you're long-legged, if somebody puts their seat back a little bit, that just crushes into your fucking knees.
Well, to be honest, the guy in front of me, even if he wanted to, couldn't have reclined his chair because my knees were going nowhere. But yes, as you say, as a long-legged person, I'm extremely aware of how frustrated that would make me. So as a sort of courtesy to the atmosphere and everyone on Earth, I do not recline my seat because I don't know who the person is behind me and I wouldn't want to upset them.
Right, final one. If you're sitting next to someone you don't know and they want to talk to you, how do you feel about that? Do you want to get into a conversation with them?
Well, the problem is you can't fake a foreign language because I think we've proved that I can't do that convincingly anyway. There's a risk that they'll speak that language fluently.
Yeah.
And there's also no way of knowing during the first interaction that this person is going to be a pest. It's only about 2 minutes in you realise, oh God, you're wanting to talk to me all flight here, aren't you?
Yeah.
I don't know the way out of this other than pretending to fall asleep, which isn't great because you probably don't want to have your eyes closed if you're not going to sleep for the next 3 hours.
No, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I find normally conversation will run out in the end. But
so it's all about finding the politest possible moment to pop your headphones on.
Yes. If they're the chatty one, let them get to the end of an anecdote and then say, oh, that's lovely. And then pop the headphones on. That's the way. That's the quick, just quick, like ninja style. Just whack them on. Yeah, done. When I came to your wedding, there was a lady sitting next to me. She had a very young baby. I ended up having a really nice chat with her, and I don't feel like I was intruding too much, but I wanted to put her at ease because the baby was crying quite a lot, and I could sense that she was feeling like, oh, I hope this isn't really annoying. I mean, it was, but I wasn't going to say that because, I mean, let's face it, if it's not your child, there's nothing more fucking irritating than a baby crying for a long time, is there? But in the end, I ended up holding the baby for her for a little while. Because
Really? Just because
she was getting a bit flustered, and I just said, do you want me to hold it for a little while? And then we had a lovely little chat, and it was all a very friendly, amicable thing. And we left and said, oh, I hope you have a lovely time. Oh, you have a lovely time. Yeah. And I think, you know, we made friends for the flight, and I think that's a nice thing to do, isn't it?
That is a nice thing. I tried to do a nice thing for someone on my flight, which was I brought some chewy sweets on for the popping of the ears during the takeoff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was quite a good idea of me. I thought, you know, I'll be nice. I'll turn to the guy next to me. I'll say, would you like a sweet for your ears? And turned out there was a bit of a language barrier. And
he stuck the sweet in his ear.
Well, that was the problem. He looked perplexed. And I didn't really know how to get out of this because he wasn't understanding. So I just said, sweet. And
then
I just shouted at him now. that's what the British people do, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you've not understood the first time, just raise your voice and shout at them. And I just sort of motioned and pointed, for your ears. And then he looked really confused. Yeah. And I thought, God, is he thinking I'm suggesting to shove this in his ear? And eventually I thought the penny dropped and he took a sweet and said thank you. And that was the last we spoke for 3 hours.
Shoved it up his ass.
Trev, last week we did some agony uncle questions.
Yes, from the AI.
Do you want to do some more?
Yes, let's do that. Did you see, by the way, that there was some AI bigwig this week saying we should all be aware that there's a real threat of human extinction because of AI and the speed in which it's learning to do things? And I mean,
probably job losses in the future. Yeah, but extinction, yeah. I mean, that seems a bit drastic.
No, they would say we should take the dangers of AI as seriously as nuclear war, you know, that sort of thing, because presumably that's what they could learn. Well, I just think we'll unplug it. If it becomes that much of it, because it's not going to be intelligent enough to power itself, surely. So I think, yeah, we can worry about it, but if it gets too much, unplug the fucking thing.
It can do. I mean, I can't get my head around it entirely yet, but I'm playing with it a lot, and it's quite staggering what it can do.
Just keep an eye on it, Ben, and if yours starts getting a little bit,
you can blame me if it all goes tits up.
Yeah,
okay,
just take the plug out. Right. So, okay, let's see what Uncles Trev and Ben can come up with.
Okay, first one this week. Dear Uncles Trev and Ben, I'm facing a peculiar situation with my car. Every time I park it in a public space, it attracts a crowd of seagulls who perch on it and refuse to leave. Not only is this an inconvenience to clean up after them, but it also creates a spectacle that draws unwanted attention. How can I deter the seagulls from treating my car like their personal perch without causing harm to them or my vehicle?
Wow, it's got a thing about bird problems. We had a parrot thing last time.
Do you know what a mosquito is? And I don't mean the flying insect thing.
No.
Basically, it's an electronic device that is used to, people plug it in and put it on their lawns, and it emits, whenever it detects motion, a very high-pitched noise.
Okay. Yes.
And the idea is it gets foxes and off your land. I think some shops actually even use it to put outside their shop, so it gets rid of teenagers, because when you're young enough, you can hear this certain pitch until you're about 30-odd.
Yes, no, that's right. I've heard that, yes.
So you could try and do a sort of... Is there a similar pitch or frequency that wouldn't bother humans but would get rid of the seagulls that you could leave plugged in your car without... well, not plugged into your car, because that would drain your battery, but...
Yeah.
Would that work?
The seagull is a... It's a feisty bird as well, isn't it? And they don't seem to give two shits, really, a lot of the time about any attempts to get rid of it. I mean, they really are. Like, I think a seagull looks at a human and just thinks, right, I'm going to fucking come at you. if you can get back at me, marvellous. I mean, there was a man recently, I'm not condoning this, by the way.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Like, with a seagull and some sort of lead. And I think, well,
oh, that's not what I thought you were going
to
say.
Someone's got to tame them. What else did you... I mean, it's probably a really nasty thing that you heard.
No, I mean, and I'm not... Again, I'm not justifying what this man did, but it was quite funny. He was a fairly heavy-set gentleman, and he was enjoying his fish and chip lunch on the beach. And I think he felt quite threatened, because he was enjoying his lunch.
Yeah.
And a seagull swooped in for his bit of cod,
yeah.
And he punched it.
Punched it, wow.
Mid-air. I thought, I get very protective of my sandwiches, but there's a limit. I'm also quite scared of seagulls, so I wouldn't have dared tackle it.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, that's pure instinct, I think. I think if you see, if you see that coming at you, then I think you're going to lash out, aren't you, one way or another. I'm not condoning punching another creature, but that, I think, would be pure instinct.
I think I'd punch a seagull to protect my wife or my family or any fictional future children, but over a bit of cod, it just seemed a bit...
No, but I think it's like, it doesn't really matter what you think it's coming for. The fact that it's coming at you would just make you react. I think that's just pure instinct, isn't it, to react to something. You know, I mean, I'm the same, even with like a small... Like, I've got all the moths in the house again. It's that time of year. Like, if one comes a bit near me, I'll lash out. It's like an instinct.
Okay.
I mean, what I try and do is get it. I'm becoming quite adept at sort of grabbing a moth. And then they sort of, because they're such flimsy little fuckers, you open your hand, there's like just a pile of dust in your hand. It's quite satisfying, but also... You feel a little bit guilty, but, you know, I've got to win that battle. So I don't know what you can do to stop them getting on your car. I mean, they are a nuisance. There was a fish and chip shop recently employed someone because of customers being attacked by seagulls. I think to stand outside their shop dressed as a seagull to try and put seagulls off.
I'm sure I read a while ago in the news that there was some zoo that was offering someone a job to dress up as a giant eagle to scare off local birds that were being a pest.
That's it. So I've just opened the story and I got this entirely wrong. It's not a fish and chip shop at all. It's a zoo is recruiting people to wear giant inflatable bird costumes to scare off seagulls.
I knew I'd see it. That sounds like a fever dream, doesn't it? But yes. I was right. Good.
So that's what you do. You employ someone to stand by your car dressed as an eagle.
That seems like quite an expensive solution. Could you not get some sort of inflatable pop-up eagle?
Oh, well, you could do just like get a homeless person and offer them quid, you know, give them...
They can live in the boot.
And they could sell the big issue while they're standing by your car.
Or, I mean, you could, if you're particularly selfish, you could sort of always carry a bucket of chum in the boot and just slosh it over the car next to you as you get out.
Yes, that would certainly leave your car well alone. Just lots of fish guts and just chuck it over someone else's car.
Perfect.
Solved.
All right. Do you want to move on to the next problem?
Go on.
Thankfully not about birds. Dear Uncles Trev and Ben, I find myself in an unusual predicament with my house plants. They seem to thrive whenever I play heavy metal music, growing faster and producing vibrant blooms. However, my taste in music clashes with the serene atmosphere I want to create in my home. How can I strike a balance between my desire for a peaceful environment and the apparent botanical love for head-banging tunes?
Well, put
headphones on your plants.
On the plants. That would seem to be the best option. Put little headphones around the pot.
Mind you, you're going to have more than one plant, are you? And that's going to be the headphone splitter of all splitters for that many.
Yeah, and it's going to be just all you're going to hear is that tinny sort of. Because if you've got a lot of them going, you're going to get some bleed through, aren't you? So that's going to be annoying.
Well, I have a couple of solutions for this, I think.
Go on.
One, grow the plants in the shed outside.
Yes.
Until desired size. Yes. Then at that point, bring them in and that's done. Or if you don't have a shed, simply play the heavy metal music whenever you're out of the house and turn it off when you come home.
It's going to be annoying for the neighbours, isn't it? All day.
Well, it doesn't have to be booming, does it? Didn't say heavy metal music at an enormous volume.
Yeah.
I mean, you think heavy metal, you think loud. I give you that.
The answer's got to be headphones on the plants. I don't see any other way to solve it.
What was the name of that film where there was like these killer plants who would sing?
Yeah. What was it called? Is it Little Shop of Horrors?
That's the one. Yeah.
Yes.
And they all sort of get really huge and want to start eating the people and stuff. So you don't want to leave them too long.
No.
So, you know, or get them too big. So, I'd say whenever you're not there, just play a bit of the music, not too loud to annoy the neighbours, and you'll be golden.
And then if they start getting too big, put on the music that they don't like. And then they'll obviously shrink a little bit, maybe.
Oh, I'm not sure that's how that works.
We are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast for episode 180.
Well done.
Been very plain airplane centric, this one.
It has, but I mean, it's been relevant to us.
It has been relevant to us, and you know, yes, it has. So before we go, as always, some recommendations for you. I've watched some good things in the last week, Ben.
Okay.
I watched a film on Netflix called Lou, L-O-U.
Right.
And it's a story of a mysterious loner who lives a quiet life with her dog. And she battles the elements in her own dark past when her neighbour's little girl is kidnapped during a storm.
Oh, sounds a bit dark.
Yes, it's quite a dark tale. But I really enjoyed it. And the other film I watched on Netflix, which is good, is called Old.
Okay.
It's, I think, not to everyone's taste. It's kind of a bit Stephen King-like. It's basically a family go on holiday and they go to a secluded beach. But they're horrified to discover that the beach has powers and it quickens the aging process, which slashes their lifespan to one day.
That does sound I'm not going to lie, mate, a bit shit.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent.
So, well, hopefully it's better than the description.
So they're both on Netflix. On the BBC iPlayer, if you look for BBC comedy short films, there's a whole selection of new films up, including one that's been directed by Ricky Gervais called 7 Minutes, which stars Joe Wilkinson. Really enjoyed that. I think you've watched it. It's quite a dark sort of underlying story.
Yes, probably worth a trigger warning for anyone. It does contain themes of suicide, so yes. You might want to be aware of that going into it. I watched it. It is dark, but I thought very good.
Yes, and I also want to recommend one called Birdsong, which is another one of the short films, which is very surreal, but brilliant. Finally, the other thing I'm going to recommend is on the BBC Sounds app is Room 101 is back with Paul Merton hosting it.
Oh, okay. Because it was Frank Skinner for a while, wasn't it?
Frank Skinner did the TV version. This is back on the radio.
Oh, okay.
And as much as I love Frank Skinner, I never liked that format of three people. When Paul Merton did it on the telly and Nick Hancock before him, it was just one person per episode. And I never liked the three people panel format.
Fair enough.
And this radio version, it's Paul Merton back doing it, but it's gone back to just the one person. I've listened to the first couple of episodes, really enjoyed them. Well worth a listen. A
couple of quick recommendations from me. Since my lovely wife took me as a birthday treat to see Peter Kay at the O2 Arena back in April.
Very nice.
I've been sort of on a bit of a Peter Kay nostalgia kick, going back watching a load of his old stuff, and recently she's introduced me to Car Share, which at the time I completely missed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm really enjoying it. It's there's a couple of moments in it in the first series, I don't know if it carries on in series 2 and 3, where it sort of cuts to sort of them daydreaming as themselves in the music, and that gets a little weird, right. I won't lie, but yeah, if you can get past that, it's generally really funny. And the other thing is, we have just picked back up after years of putting it down, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay.
Which we're just watching series 10 and 11, and it's so funny still. Apparently they are filming series 12 at the moment, and that's going to be the last one.
Wow.
Which is sad, but I mean, I suppose all good things must come to an end, and they have done plenty of it, so very much recommend that.
Brilliant. Well, I've got to say, Curb Your Enthusiasm, I've sort of dipped into that over the years. Car Share, absolutely love that. And can I recommend that you dig out on YouTube the outtakes from Car Share, particularly with Rhys Shearsmith?
I have seen it. Inny Kamosi, the whole step up.
Yes.
I have pissed myself laughing at that. It's very, very funny. Definitely worth a watch. I think it's on Amazon Prime, Car Share, and I think Curb's on there as well.
Well, there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. Rat Trevor Bill on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.